everybody, and welcome to another episode of I Could Talk Kayfabe. I'm Joe.
And I'm Sean.
And we're going to talk kayfabe here. Sports Review Wrestling, May from 1990.
Yes, the clunky magazine known as Sports Review Wrestling. I think the clunkiest of wrestling after mags.
Yeah.
In my personal opinion.
And this mag kind of got my attention on eBay. It was in a lot of magazines. And because it's from 1990 and it talks about Hulk Hogan winning the Royal Rumble, but they have a photo of him from like 1979. Like he's
it's definitely like an 82.
Yeah, it's early 80s, but like it's like he's got full head of hair. You can see the dark hair roots. He wasn't into bleaching all that much back then. Wasn't as religious about it as he was later on.
It's a great photo though.
Yeah, and he's got like his finger in the air.
It is kind of weird though, because the way the lighting and everything looks like he just drank a bunch of Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
He's got a bug juice binge.
Yeah. But he's got dark mustache.
Right.
Yeah.
So Sports Review Wrestling, May 1990.
Yeah.
Is what we're talking about today. On the cover, it says Hogan victorious. It's a picture of Hulk Hogan with his mouth open and his hair, dark roots showing. And he's pointing the number one finger up, Ichiban number one. And it's, Hogan victorious. The Royal Rumble sets the stage for WrestleMania 6 and beyond. Because, you know, he is the Rumble winner from that year.
Even though he was champion, he won the Rumble. Because they didn't have the stipulation where the winner of the Rumble gets a title shot.
No, that didn't happen until 93, pretty much.
Yeah. So,
it's kind of a bummer, because I always kind of wish that, you know, he won the Rumble like those 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he can win at least. 91 makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't champ at the time either.
And then he went on to WrestleMania and beat Sergeant Slaughter.
Right.
So technically, he was that was the first one that happened, but it was just coincidence.
They could have had Warrior win this one, I think. I think actually making a Warrior winning the 90 Rumble would have made more sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Hogan victorious. And then above him, we have a picture, two inset pictures. One on the left, Roddy Piper picking up... Rick Rude looks for an atomic drop. It says, his career in photos, the perils of Piper. And then to the right says, Road Warriors, we haven't even reached our prime.
That's crazy to think that. 1990, the Road Warriors haven't even reached their prime.
They're already 7 years in.
Yeah, I think they've reached their prime.
I think definitely when they won the NWA titles, I mean, probably between 86 and 88 is probably their prime.
Yeah.
I mean, you can call the WWF run what it is, but... that was pretty much, you know, that wasn't the same.
Yeah.
We're at the very top. It says Zabisco Sammartino feud rages again.
This caught my eye also when I bought the magazine. I was like, I don't remember them having a feud in 1990, but I will read about it. And when we get to it, you will see how let down I was once we get to that article.
You can already see it coming. Yeah. And then in the corner it says interview Yukon John Nord.
Yeah, which is pretty... when we talk about that, it's interesting.
It's important to talk to John Nord in 1990.
But when I saw that, I was like, I want to see this John Nord interview.
And then AWA's off the top rope rule is off the wall.
It sure was.
This is a very AWA heavy cover in terms of text, because you got the Zabisco thing, that's an AWA story, and then John Nord and obviously the top rope thing. It's all AWA stuff. On the inside cover, I want to point out pictures for Last Chance of WWF LJN figures.
Yeah.
Which we get. I always used to like looking at this because you'd be like, because I remember when I first saw this like years ago when I was a kid, and I didn't know that these existed. And here they are.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you can get, for some reason, Demolition Axe, but not Demolition Smash.
Yeah, they had planned for Axe and Smash, but then like that last 1988 line, they only released half the line, and then the toy line, I think LJN went under.
What was the other half? Do we know?
They released an Axe and they released a Warlord, but the Barbarian and Smash never got released. There was a Mr. Perfect that was supposed to be released, a Brother Love that was supposed to be released.
Okay.
And they never came in. Bad News Brown, I think, was one that never came into fruition. Yeah.
Where's Warlord on here?
I don't see him in this photo, but there is a Warlord. I can confirm that there is a Warlord.
Yeah, but yeah, you got all those figures.
Yeah, I don't see Haku. I don't see Rick Rude. Those ones were all released, but very low runs. And an Andre the Giant in the black singlet was released as well.
You know what? I do like this. I wish I could have this Harley Race one.
Yeah, I would like that one too.
That was cool.
I think
there was a removable crown, right?
I have Ken Patera. I have One Man Gang. I have...
See, I never had any of these.
I have Bam Bam. I have DiBiase. I have Honky Tonk Man. I have Duggan. I had Demolition Axe, but most of the paint wore off his face, so I gave it to a friend. As I hear you take it.
So going down here, because you got the earlier series.
Yeah.
And
I had all of those ones.
Right. But here's the thing. I had Tito.
Yeah.
But I had Tito... no, wait. Is that...
That's Rick Martel, it looks like.
Oh, that's right. They did do a Strike Force. But then there's Rick Martel's up here.
Oh, is that Rick Martel? Is that Tito?
I'm confused because I see two Rick Martels, I think.
Yeah, I think there's two Rick Martels in this photo.
Unless if one didn't have the Strike Force on it and the other one did.
Okay, so what's interesting about the Rick Martel in this photo up here in the top, we're really spending a lot of time on this, but...
As we should.
This Rick Martel, I don't think exists. I think this is the only Rick Martel that they made. I don't think this one ever came out.
I do want to point out, though, the Tito back here has the white trunks because of the white the Strike Force.
Yeah.
Strike Force, but I had the purple Tito.
I had the purple Tito as well, but there was two Titos.
There was two Titos, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had the Rick Martel, the white one, and the purple Tito, so I was kind of trying to make my Strike Force, but it wasn't perfect.
So let's jump into the mailbag real quick. We have one where a picture... Virgil getting DDT'd by Jake. It's a letter being like, our message to Virgil, because it's a story about Virgil.
Yeah.
Our message to Virgil, don't take DiBiase's abuse lying down.
No, you should stand up for yourself.
And then he did.
Yeah.
I also do like this letter here. I'm going to actually tweet this at Tony Schiavone. It says, a Schiavone fan, your magazine has not recognized what a fine job Tony Schiavone is doing as an announcer. He was the best in the NWA, and now he's the best in the WWF. And I do want to put over his podcast, What Happened When. It's actually a lot of fun to listen to.
I got to start listening to it. Yeah.
You should.
Yeah,
it's really good.
People who I know who don't even listen to podcasts listen to it. So.
It is aggravating in some ways, but nonetheless, I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I think you would enjoy it too. So the Tattler, because, you know, we got to talk about the biggest things in wrestling here.
Yeah. which I don't know how the biggest things in wrestling could have. Tojo Yamamoto by 1990, but whatever.
Well, this was when the USWA and the CWA, the Continental, united.
Okay.
So this is a big deal to talk about here. And Tojo Yamamoto and P.Y. Chuhai, a.k.a. Phil Hickerson, playing a Korean or an Oriental man.
Yeah.
Who looks nothing like an Oriental man.
No, other than a head. He's got a
headband and he has random face paint on.
Yeah.
And it is funny because in the interviews, he's like, by the way, I'm Oriental.
Yeah.
He just, you know, and that's exactly how he says it. Like, he even says it in the one another project here, such as here. But I do want to say, P.Y. Chuhai going in my game.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm going to find that out.
So did they ever team? Because, dude, I've watched old footage of Tojo Yamamoto and he was awesome. So if I want to know if they teamed up.
Oh, he was always. Tojo Yamamoto, I feel like, wrestled very well up until the point, right up until he died.
Yeah.
Like, he was even though he was old here, like, he was ancient.
Yeah.
You know, but he was still kicking it. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched Tojo Yamamoto footage and that guy was awesome. And that's the first mention, I think, of him on our podcast.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about Tojo here.
Because he was more of a 70s guy and we're more 80s and 90s, but Tojo Yamamoto was incredible.
Yeah.
So, like, I could just talk about, I could do a whole Tojo Yamamoto podcast. Yeah, I love that guy.
Tojo Potamoto.
Yeah.
Let's make that happen. Yeah, and basically they're talking about the CWA happenings. You know, Dirty White Boy lost his valet, Dirty White Girl, to Chris Champion of all people. You know, and
she wanted to take a bath, and he's like, "I'll shower you in gold. I'm a champion.
I'll just give you a shower because, that's what you need because you're a dirty white girl, and you need to find water.
You need to be a clean white girl.
Clean white girl. Barry, also in the Tattler, Barry Windham. This is when he was the Widowmaker, and he just basically said, "Fuck it," and left the WWF.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
And they're like, "What happened to Barry Windham?" And they're like, "Everybody's like, I don't know what happened. I don't know. He's still with us." I think basically the WWF was saying, "Yeah, he's with us," and then Barry Windham's like, "I ain't saying I'm not with you, but I'm also not with you."
Then he got. I remember at Survivor Series, he was billed to be in the match. Then he was replaced by Earthquake.
Canadian Earthquake.
Canadian Earthquake. Yeah, he was still the Canadian Earthquake at that time.
I will say, in terms of hindsight, upgrade.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And then we got an Eddie Ellinger segment, Straight Talk with Eddie Ellinger. And basically, it's just him dishing on random wrestlers and calling people stupid and making fun of Dusty Rhodes for being with Sapphire. I do like this one here. He says, Dusty Rhodes is making enough money to afford any valet or imagineer in the world. Sapphire is his choice. Or just remember, though. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I do like Kurt, parentheses, not at Mr. Not as perfect as the last time we checked Henning.
Oh. But he was still undefeated at this time. He didn't lose till WrestleMania 6.
True, but yeah. He says, Kurt will soon discover that unless you're in an English class, anytime Lanny Poffo is in your corner, it's a handicap. I don't know, Lanny Poffo, you know, he was an athletic man. That's a guy that needs to find his way into a game. Or a,
I know.
Does he have action figures? I think he's got an action.
He had a Jack specific one. I don't know if he's got a Mattel one.
Yeah, we need one with a Frisbee.
Because I have a Lanny Poffo, it's one of the few figures I actually have, and I have one, so. Yeah, and it was the Genius figure, actually, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody.
It was a Genius figure, but the packaging said Lanny Poffo, which confused me, but I still bought it, so, yeah.
I also do want to point out here, Eddie Ellner says, life does change as you approach 30. I used to root for Kevin Von Erich, which... My shock is that Eddie Ellner was not even 30. The imaginary Eddie Ellner was not 30.
Yeah.
No, that took me a
while. How old is Eddie Ellner these days?
Oh, he's not anything because he's not real.
Oh.
He's an imaginary 45.
Oh.
Oh, shit. No, actually, no, that'd be more than that. Probably 50. 55? If you're talking 30.
Well, if he's 30 and this was almost 30 years ago, he'd be pushing 60. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we were. Better check up on him, see how he's doing. Locker Room Confidential, Bill Apter lamenting about the demise of the territories.
Yeah.
Talks a lot about that here. And it's actually a pretty good article, just kind of talking about how, you know, Stampede's gone or suspending operations and, you know, the USWA and the CWA are together. And now it's, you know, a lot of the guys that started out, you know, and became stars, started out in these territories, and now these territories aren't around anymore. So it'll get worse. Don't you fret there, Billy boy. We'll just kind of skip through some of these because I don't care about the Inquiring Reporter question of the month, which is, what is your opinion of Ladies Professional Wrestling Association? I'm like, great.
What is his opinion?
Well, so it's just they ask people and people.
Oh, they ask people. Oh, I don't care about people.
Yeah, no, exactly. I was like, you know, nobody else has anything to say.
Because I know that there was that, and that was like the more serious wrestling. They actually used lady wrestlers, whereas Glow was a TV show.
It was pretty much like after Glow.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically what it was.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of guys, you know, a lot of ladies in there that were, you know, super talented, you know, that were, you know, their mainstays on the scene and stuff like that. And I remember they tried to do a pay-per-view once and I think they lost a bunch of money and that was it.
There is a, the question and answer section, the question
actually,
of the month.
I actually like this segment a lot. Top wrestlers answer your questions.
And there is P.Y. Chuhai and he does answer since I am of Oriental extraction.
Well, I do. The question of the month is, who is the most overrated wrestler you've ever seen?
Oh, okay.
And we get...
He says Chris Adams.
I do like Don Morocco being like, well, Pedro Morales, because when he wrestled Pedro Morales in the 80s, he was like, he was slow and he didn't leave his feet. Baron Von Raschke actually makes a really good point. Yeah, I feel like he almost kind of answers it real, because he's like, he says Billy Robinson was the most overrated wrestler because he was such a great tactical wrestler, but he never won a title.
Oh.
And it almost kind of feels like that's legit. In a way, you know, I guess
Bob Orton sticking with Hulk Hogan, even though he's been like gone from the WWF for years.
Well, the way his point is, he's like, I think Hulk Hogan has the officials in his back pocket because he would always he was just an average wrestler with below average speed and agility, but for some reason he kept on winning. Larry Zbysko, of course, says Bruno Sammartino. So we accuse the AWA of instituting a top rope rule, which apparently. They actually make a good point here where they say the AWA should not be doing something like that because they're already being considered a third-rate organization at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably even more the damage has already been done. But they really kind of go in on that because, you know, that basically takes away a lot of action, you know, from having a top rope rule.
And their top rope rule was you couldn't jump from the top rope. You know how there was those you probably couldn't throw over the top rope either.
No, they said that here too. They instituted. Yeah. They said you can't be thrown over the top rope. You can't throw a guy into the post outside, and you can't do a top rope move.
Yeah, which is like you can't do the Doomsday Device.
which is apparently what the Beverly Brothers as a Destruction Crew would do back in the day.
Oh.
And so that's why that's a picture of them here doing this, and they're kind of like, well, you know, they did a bunch of matches where they got disqualified because they were doing the same match, but you can kind of still do the same kind of move from the second rope.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if you're the Beverly Brothers, you know, or the Destruction Crew, you could still win the match. You know, I don't see it as any less of a thing, but I still think that rule's dumb. Yeah. Like, I always thought it was dumb when I heard about it in WCW when Bill Watts did it.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, so let's see. Matt Brock looks at Arn Anderson. He says he's awesome, and he's true. And it's true. And point counterpoint. Managers should or should not be banned from ringside at the Royal Rumble.
And they talk about managers being banned and shouldn't be banned, which I remember in 1989, the managers escorted the guy to the ring, then went to the back.
Which is actually, that's how a lot of managers used to do it way back in the 70s, too.
And then in 1990, the managers just kind of hung out at ringside. Even if their guy was eliminated, they had another guy coming, so they would stay at the ring.
Yeah.
So there was like a bunch of managers hanging out outside the ring in 1990. And I remember that thinking like, are the managers going to get involved with Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior? Because when the Hogan and Warrior were in the ring together by themselves, you had all the managers outside. Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's kind of silly. But, I mean, I will say, though, that as a kayfabe sense, I would not want to see a wrestler that I liked be eliminated by a manager.
Yeah.
Or because of a manager. Because that's not fair. It's not fair.
No.
I mean, I still watch it to this day, and it actually really disturbs me. Watching, I mean, I know it's not the same case here, but it's still kind of similar where Hulk Hogan in the 92 Rumble gets thrown out by Sid, and then he grabs Sid's hand to pull him out.
Yeah.
And then Flair comes over and dumps him out, and Flair wins. But that's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's bullshit, and that should not have happened. And it, you know, especially considering how Sid was a fresh man in the ring, I think he was number 30 or 29 or something like that. He should have been able to just go in there and just throw Flair out.
I think he was 30.
I think he was 29, because I think somebody else was 30.
I don't remember.
I think it was maybe Warlord was 30.
Yeah, I think maybe Warlord was 30.
Or somebody like that. But yeah, that really frustrated me, and I didn't like that. And I'm with Craig Peters here. Let's ban him. Wrestler of the Month, Ric Flair. Well, he's always a Wrestler of the Month. He's pretty good. Career and photos of Piper, and basically it's just a photo retrospective of Roddy Piper, and we get to see some awesome photos
here. They cram a lot of photos of Roddy Piper early years and up until like present day 1990.
Well, like a lot of photos here of him wearing the plaid trunks. Also, this one I've never seen of him bald.
Yeah, because you see him getting his head shaved in this photo.
Yeah, I've always seen that, but I've seen this photo a lot. Where he's getting shaved and Butcher Vachon and Jimmy Lennon are cutting his hair. But I've never seen this one where he's bald. I never saw this one either where he's wearing a mask.
Yeah.
He's doing the CM Punk deal wearing the mask here. I also like this photo of him and Blassie. That's
and Blassie like pointing at each other. And he says that Blassie's an old man and should just get out of the sport.
Blassie looks fucking jacked.
There, yeah, man. He does. He looks great. He's, man, he's probably only like 60 at that point.
He's old, man. I wish I was that old. I don't wish I was that old, but I hope when I'm that old, I look that good.
Yeah.
Which isn't even that good, but I still would want to look that way. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That geek.
Then the NWA years, we get a picture of Piper wrestling Ricky Steamboat in a mustache. Those are always fun to see.
Yeah.
When Ricky's got a mustache. And we get a bunch of classic photos of him wrestling Briscoes and the Funk and, or was it Flair and Wahoo and Race. And here's the one where there's that brief one where he went to Florida and helped Kevin Sullivan team up against Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, man, that would have been cool to see.
That was a very brief time. But I would like that footage.
Yeah.
I would like to see that. And then we get on the other side here, I do like this photo here from the dog collar match from Starrcade 83 with him and Valentine. And it's the way the match starts where they're kind of like on all fours and they're facing each other. And then they do that thing where it's like, when you watch the match, they do the thing where each person's trying to pull each other. And it looks fucking cool. I gotta go back and watch that match again.
Yeah, that's a good match.
That's a brutal ass match, but it's good. And then he's in a WWF, of course, and there's a whole bunch of photos of him causing havoc in the flower shop and stuff. He's
trying to chop Junkyard Dog, but it looks like the dog ducks and he hits David Schultz. And
He's assaulting. I think what he's doing is Dr. D was holding Tony Atlas here.
Oh, it's Tony Atlas?
And he's about to punch him in the gut.
Oh.
I think he's got his hand up and he's got this. He's about to give him a right punch to the gut. Two photos here I want to point out. This is a photo from WrestleMania, a famous photo from WrestleMania 1, where I think it must have been Hulk just gave Piper an atomic drop, and Roddy's selling it, holding his crotch, you know, with his hands over his crotch. When I met Roddy Piper at the one ballpark brawl, I had this picture. I had him sign it. And he's like, oh, yeah, look at me. I'm not doing too well there. I always remember that. Like, oh, look at that one. Hey, how's it going? Yeah, like Roddy Piper, you know. I'm not doing the good Piper, but I was like, oh, look at me. I'm not doing good there. I always remember that about this one.
This one, he's wrestling Hillbilly Jim. We just spoke in the last podcast how overrated Hillbilly Jim was.
Yeah, too bad they didn't ask me that question. Yeah. I would have been like, Hillbilly Jim, case closed, goodbye. Well, I would have actually been between that or Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, I think I would have said Hillbilly Jim over Jimmy Snuka.
Third, Al Perez. quick question. Can you see this one here? Here he is wrestling the Macho Man wearing bicycle shorts.
Wow.
That's a very rare, extremely rare variation of Piper wearing bicycle shorts. The only other time he wore bicycle shorts, I remember, was in that Rumble appearance from 2008, I think it was, when him and Snuka went at it. So... yeah, so there you go. That's I'm a wrestling attire variants are very very important. Anyway, so you talk about this.
Oh man, what a letdown this was. So I was like, oh, Larry Zbyszko and Bruno Sammartino are feuding again. No, Zbyszko Sammartino feud rages again, but it's David Sammartino, and the photo has Larry has him in a chin lock, sleeper hold, whatever, and it's David, and I'm so disappointed. Because I thought, oh, maybe Bruno came out of retirement and they had a program in the AWA in 1990 I didn't know about.
Yeah.
No, that was not the case. It was David Sammartino. This sucks. What a letdown. I hate this.
So I guess we should just move on because...
Well, I mean, you know, if there's not much to say, it's only...
Well, I mean, it's fucking Larry Zbyszko against David Sammartino.
Yeah, it's continued.
How exciting can it be?
Continued on page 60. I don't choose to continue it on page 60.
That's a lot
60.
Of effort
yeah.
to go all the way to that next
because
page.
Because the next page is Hulk Hogan winning the Royal Rumble, and God, it's a more it. Recent photo of Hulk Hogan, not one from 1982.
Is he wearing snakeskin? Is he wearing snakeskin pants?
Yeah, snakeskin pants, and he's got like a beaded necklace as opposed to his regular gold... chain, so yeah.
Wow, alternate casual attire for Hulk Hogan.
Yeah,
man, I wish Hogan liked me.
Yeah, maybe.
Wait. Actually, no, I don't. Here's the thing. Okay, I'm gonna point this out real quick. Because a lot of times we'll look at pictures, we'll see Hulk Hogan. Like, man, Hulk Hogan was so cool. And I always and I don't forget, but I remember. What happens is I remember eventually that he is a racist.
Yeah,
he is a straight up racist and just
well.
No.
I'm not condoning what he said. Obviously, what he said is racist.
Yes.
It's a slippery slope. I get what he was saying. He, in his mind, doesn't think that it's racist to say that.
No.
And that's why he's not racist, really. Like, he's not really racist. Although, I don't condone what he said. Everything he said is terrible. I don't recommend...
Yeah, don't
say that.
Don't say what he said.
But I see where he's coming from. he doesn't think that's racist. And you know, like other guys like Booker T came on Twitter and defended him. He's like, no, Hulk Hogan just made a mistake. He's used poor choice of words. And I agree with Booker T. Hulk Hogan just used it was terrible what he said, but I get where he was coming from. I know what he meant.
Because
it'd be like me saying, because I'm Italian, but you don't see me acting like a Guido. Like I don't wear a tracksuit and gold chains and all that. So it'd be like me saying, oh man, I don't want my daughter ending up with some Guido. There's Italians and there's Guidos. That's what he was saying. I don't condone it, but I well,
I think that's what we maybe some people think he's saying, but maybe. And look, and that could be the case.
Yeah.
However, he decided to use that thing. I mean, it's very insensitive of him. And I mean, there's a lot of ways you could unpack this, you know, based on the situation. And I would rather not get into it. I think that what you said makes, you know, saying that that could make sense too.
Yeah. I don't want to come across saying I condone it. Like, no, I don't.
But here's the thing. I want to say this when we're praising Hulk Hogan, we're praising the character Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. We're not praising Terry Bollea.
I'm not praising. And I know that's stupid. I know that's awful. Or not awful, but I know it's very bullshit to say in a way, but I'm not praising Terry Bollea, the racist spewing man. I am praising Hulk Hogan for looking fucking cool in the picture, or just being like, wow, look at Hulkamania.
Yeah.
But I will go out of my way to make fun of Terry Bollea for commenting on the drapes while eating too much pork. That I will do. And you know, and I will continue to be blocked by Terry Bollea Twitter, the man behind the Twitter.
Yeah.
Or whoever. I don't know. I don't know if he has somebody doing it for him. I'm assuming he knows how to use it. But yeah, so that's, I just want to clarify that.
I'll tell you, like, when I get like 5 notifications on my Twitter, I'm like, I think I'm like king shit. I'm like, oh my God, there's 5 notifications. I got to imagine he must get hundreds a day. Why did he block you? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no way, like, because you tagged him in a tweet and like,
but maybe
people commented, but there's no way he got so many notifications that he had to block you.
Maybe he was just in the mood. Maybe he heard what I said. Maybe he was hanging and banging and he turned on the pod and he heard me go, oh, too much pork. Ha ha. And then that was it.
Yeah.
It's very likely. I mean, I have gone in on that. I would go in on that moment quite a bit.
Yeah.
So if he could just be in the mood, you know, I mean, I that's just how it is and whatever, but you know, I want Hulk Hogan the character to unblock me.
Yeah.
I don't want Terry Bollea the man. Fuck him. Hulk Hogan the character, you know, I am praising your choice of snakeskin pants and Hulk rules shirt.
Yeah, and your necklace is awesome.
And your alternate necklace, and I want an action figure of it.
I think this is a good spot to take a break, and we will compose ourselves a little bit. And you can hear us talk about Worst Collection Ever, and we'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence, and it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed, so.
Oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
And we are back, and the Road Warriors are in our face, and they haven't even reached their prime yet, according to them. And it's a pretty awesome photo of them doing the Doomsday Device.
This is actually a really great photo.
Yeah.
The Doomsday Device, it's like one of the Samoans is getting it, and it's pretty great. And basically, this is around the time when they're wrestling, you know, the Skyscrapers and all those guys. You know, they're just brawling. And they're
brawling. They're just, the look on his face. His face paint's all smeared and he's got his mouth wide open.
This is actually a great picture. Yeah. Because it captures this awesome moment of him. Like, it's almost like he's posing.
Yeah.
Because like, he's giving the clothesline and he's looking straight ahead. And his mouth is open, his eyes are wiggling straight ahead, and it's fucking cool.
And it's like photoshopped where it's like they're not even in a ring. They're just like floating in space.
Yeah, this is a great photo.
Yeah.
But yeah, we haven't reached our prime yet. I disagree. You know, they're probably in their money-making prime.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of feel like that's when they were their best, because I would say between 85 and 88, it's probably the best years for them. Because they were, you know, just crazy over in Japan.
Maybe they were just alluding to that they were going to WWF because they kind of ran out of opponents in Jim Crockett Promotions. It was like nothing left for them to do. So.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So they're like, let's go to the WWF and squash Demolition.
Yeah, that they did. I loved watching the Road Warriors win the tag titles at SummerSlam 91.
Oh, man, yeah. Because
it was like a street brawl and everything, and it was great to watch. But I always felt once they did it, and I feel like this probably was the same way in the NWA, that once it happened, you're just kind of like, all right, well, what else?
Yeah.
Because it's always fun to watch them come out and beat the piss out of somebody and do an interview, do their thing that way, and not so much, you know, defend titles and stuff like that. Because in your mind, in my mind, or saying or anybody's mind, they should not be beat because they are the best team. They are the most powerful team. You know, the fact that a team consisting of Jimmy Garvin and Steve Regal, the non-English Steve Regal, beat them is astounding.
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit. And the fact that, you know, that a team like any team, like, what was it, Money Inc.? I think Money Inc. beat them.
Yeah.
Was it the Disasters? No.
No, I thought the Nasty Boys won the titles back, right?
No, Nasty Boys never won the titles back.
Oh.
They lost the title. Now I'm blanking.
So. Yeah, it was Money Inc. It was Money Inc.
But I think it was but I think that it was I don't know if it's ever been found, but or if it's ever been aired. Definitely hasn't been aired. The title change. That actual title change happened like on a house show. And it's never been aired because Hawk didn't want it to air.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because that and they were
pretty, happened a lot back in the day.
Like, it did in the early 90s.
Yeah, like Bret Hart winning the title from Ric Flair ended up being a Coliseum home video exclusive because Ric Flair didn't want it to air, and then this didn't happen. Like this didn't air, and
yeah, man.
And then the Money Inc. and the Steiner Brothers traded titles on the house shows, and then like the Steiner Brothers just showed up one day as champs, and
yeah. That's another team, too, that I had a hard time believing that the Steiner brothers would lose a match.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because they finally won the titles from Money Inc., but then they lost them pretty quickly to the Quebecers.
The Quebecers won it with the Province of Quebec Rules match.
But that's
how they had to beat them. They had to use a gimmicked match.
But that still doesn't make any sense because the Steiners is another team, even from watching NWA.
Yeah, because they won by disqualification and won the belts. Yeah.
Which I'm certain was probably a thing from Scott, you know, and Rick. But nonetheless.
He's like, I'm not going to drop the title to the Rougeos. I'm going to go to open a Shoney's if you make me do that. And they're like, all right, how about you hit him with a hockey stick and get disqualified and lose the belt that way? And he's like, fine.
Fine. I'm still opening a Shoney's.
Still going to open a Shoney's, but I'm not going to do it for another 20 years.
So, UConn John Nord.
I think we've probably mentioned John Nord a bunch on the podcast, but we've never gone in depth about an article about John Nord just because there's never been an article about John Nord.
Well,
but now there is.
This being AWA 1990 magazine.
Yeah.
We're talking about John Nord. For a third-rate organization, they have a lot of coverage in here.
Yeah. And John Nord, this magazine is great because he's strictly in kayfabe and he's just talking about how, like,
he's definitely talking kayfabe.
Yeah, he's UConn John Nord now, and he's like hanging out in Canada, and he's enjoying the snow, and he's reading the Bible, and he's changed his ways, and well, you're in a feud with Colonel DeBeers. Don't you hate him? He's like, I don't hate him. I want him to change his ways.
He goes, you're feuding with Colonel DeBeers. He's like, excuse me, Dave. I'm not feuding with Colonel DeBeers. I'm simply trying to show him the error of his ways. And I do like UConn John Nord because he would come to the ring wearing pants with a rope around them, flannel, and then he would wear like a moose pelt on his head and carry an axe, like a legit axe.
Yeah.
and then later on, he would go on to team with Scott Norton.
Yeah, Flapjack Scott Norton.
Flapjack Scott Norton, which according to Lee Marshall, the origin of Flapjack Scott Norton is because one day they were doing some logging, and Scott Norton went back to the cabin where they're all staying and ate all the flapjacks, like every flapjack, every fucking pancake in existence. And that's how he became Flapjack Scott Norton. There's like the merchant's like, yeah, and he just had maple syrup on his chin, and he wiped it off, and he went back for more. And I'm like, you weren't there.
He's only telling the story. Of course, he wasn't there. Oh, rest in peace, Lee Marshall.
R.I.P. Lee Marshall.
Yeah, he was a good friend of the Big Mosh, right? Or like they were friendly with each other.
They were friendly.
Yeah,
they were friendly, and he. I think I was on an interview with him. Like his natural voice is that low, and it's awesome.
Yeah,
just talking to him, he's like, "I'm Lee Marshall," or whatever. I can't even gonna try to do it.
He was the ring announcer at WrestleMania 2. I mean, that's great.
Like, was he
for the LA matches? Yeah.
Oh, I should go back and see that.
Yeah, he was the ring announcer.
I want to see younger Lee Marshall.
Yeah,
Lee Marshall was a radio guy out here.
Yeah, that's how he got. And he was the voice of Tony the Tiger.
God damn it, he was. And yeah, and also I read a lot of the recaps of Monday Nitro, right now we're like 97-ish, and he's always doing the 1-800 collect things.
Yeah, for a while that was the only thing he did for Nitro,
and which basically would be him backstage calling in.
And you know he was making like $100,000 a year just to do that.
Well, he would do like pro, and yeah, he would do other things, yeah, you know, when they could need him, because they had like a shit ton of announcers, yeah, back then. But
he was probably just good friends with Bischoff, and Bischoff was like, "I'll give you a job because you're the man," and he deserved the job.
He did.
Yeah, he was awesome.
I do want to point out here, this has to be in Portland, because we have pictures of John Nord as Nord the Barbarian.
Yeah,
and here he is wrestling against Kevin Von Erich, which from 1987, Parade of Champions. All right, I get that.
My favorite iteration of John Nord, by the way. I like that better than the Berserker.
Yeah.
Nord the Barbarian.
Nord the Barbarian was pretty great. And here he is in wrestling Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
And it took me a minute to understand where this is coming from, but this is probably when, working with Raven, Raven talks a lot about when he first broke into Portland. He kind of came in because of Piper. You know, he kind of was able to get in because of Piper liked him and stuff. And they worked with, he worked with Piper. And Piper and the Grappler would book the territory. And the Grappler is good friends with John Nord. So John Nord would do occasional spots and stuff. And, and here he is. And, Raven tells a lot of stories about that stuff. So that makes a lot of sense. And I kind of like seeing photographic proof of this.
Yeah.
And then we just talk about, he talks about his axe. He's like, I'm not gonna kill anyone with my axe. It's my friend, and it keeps me in line. But I did kill a moose, and I'm at peace.
Yeah.
So there you go. And he talks about the Bible a bunch.
He does talk about the Bible a bunch.
He doesn't quote anything from the Bible. He just says read the Bible.
He says read the Bible, and he talks about God.
So we're just going through the rest of these stories here. Somebody's wondering where Eric Embry is. Well, here he is, right there. Yeah. A picture of him.
I think that's basically it. There's a nice ad here from the wrestling ring for selling Nintendo games.
I like that. I like seeing pictures of Nintendo games.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I'm just like, oh man, that's really cool.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Power set, which then let's say is NES power set, comes with the deck, the game, two game controllers, a zapper, power pad, Duck Hunt, Mario Brothers, and World Class Track Meet.
That is the set. The power set is the one I had.
$169.
Yeah, because you had that power pad.
Yeah,
that is.
But then the regular set was the action set, which was Sans power pad.
Yeah,
was $110.
Yeah, but then you see the power pad on its own.
Power pad's $85, man.
So yeah, that's the bargain right there. You get that power set.
Yeah,
which is what I had. That's the set I had. It was awesome.
Is this a Nintendo joystick right here?
Well, that was probably a joystick that you could use for Nintendo, I'd imagine. But it probably wasn't made by Nintendo.
I like that. Oh, yeah. I feel like I should play that.
Because the Nintendo joystick that sticks out to my mind was the NES Advantage.
I feel like I never took advantage. I never had the NES Advantage.
Yeah, neither. I still to this day don't have one.
I wish I had one. Yeah. I wish I had one back then. I'd be playing games so much better.
Yeah, because you'd have the Advantage.
I would. And they didn't have to have turbo switches on it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So let's just jump right to the ratings. I do like this picture of Kurt Hennig with his hair all poofed out.
Yeah.
Looking really distressed. But we have our ratings. NWA, Flair's a champ. You got Luger as U.S. champ. I think Sting is... Because we're, February 1990. So...
So is Sting television champ?
I don't think he is.
Rated higher than Arn?
No, Arn is, because they talk about Arn beating Muda.
Yeah.
Because Sting was last TV champ back in like 89. Year before this, so
yeah, nobody else really sticks out. It's your regular run-of-the-mill NWA.
Your who's who. AWA still in the third position here.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of upheaval in the ratings because of some of the changes and some of the companies not promoting.
David Sammartino is ranked number one.
Yeah, look at that.
As a champ, David Sammartino number one.
What did David do to deserve that? He did not, because he sucks.
Yeah, he's pretty awful. The whole list is, I mean, you got Sergeant Slaughter, John Nord, Colonel DeBeers, Baron Von Roschke, Paul Diamond, but then it gets, you got Tommy Jammer, you've got the Trooper.
Trooper, a.k.a. Del Wilkes.
Yeah, and then you got the Russian Brute.
And Derek Dukes.
I couldn't even tell you who Derek Dukes was.
Derek Dukes wrestled in Minnesota, and I don't think he ever went anywhere else. That's it. That's all I remember, because I remember, yeah, he's wrestled in, like, he I remember him being in a story about how he wrestled in a boxing, or not wrestled, but he competed in a boxing match against Mark Gastineau and used to play for the Jets, and took a dive.
Oh.
And that was, that's his other claim to fame. Let's see here. Yeah, top 10.
I'm just looking. Jeff Jarrett, number 5, USWA, CWA. I just wanted to point that out, because Jeff Jarrett just entered rehab. So I hope you get better, Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
We want Global Force Wrestling back.
We do?
I don't think there was ever really a thing. you can't convince me Global Force Wrestling was a thing, like, other than just a website with a bunch of pictures on it. And then, like, an episode of Impact, they were like, oh, we're turning into Global Force Wrestling, and then it was done.
And then they're like, no, we're not.
No, we're not.
We're not Global Force Wrestling. Goodbye.
So you have Hulu, right?
Yeah.
Is Impact Wrestling on Hulu? Because they have the Pop TV on Hulu.
No, but I don't know. Oh. But you can watch it on Pluto TV. I think they've really upped their presence on that channel.
Okay.
Which I've shown you Pluto TV before.
Because I don't get Pop TV on my package at DirecTV. You'd have to, and then even if I did, it wouldn't be in high def. It's only available in standard def. I want to start watching Impact Wrestling just because I feel like...
I think you can catch up pretty easily on the Pluto TV.
Okay.
Yeah, I would try that first.
Yeah.
And that's free.
Yeah, it is free. It's nice.
Yeah. USWA. Okay, we were talking about that. PNW, my buddy Raven, Scotty the Body, is the champ.
Oh, good for him.
This is when I think it was like the height of his Portland time. It's funny because I listen to his podcast every week. I hear a lot about some of these people, and here he is. Here we see Bill Francis, who is Russ Francis's son.
Oh,
Russ Francis of WrestleMania 2 fame.
Oh, okay.
That's Bill Francis. Bill Francis is Russ's son, and I guess he was very bad, a very bad wrestler. But he's in this point, he's better than Bryan Adams
and better than the Equalizer.
Yeah, so
because he's ranked ahead of them,
he is,
which I find hard to believe, but.
But but he's not better than Steve Dahl, R.I.P. Steve Dahl.
Or Rex King.
R.I.P. Rex King. I think they're both dead, right? Yeah. No, wait. I think Rex King's still alive.
I think he's still alive.
Yeah, Steve Dahl definitely did pass away. Man, this got sad.
As did Bryan Adams. But not the Equalizer.
No, he's still alive.
I think.
Evad Sullivan.
Yeah.
And then ICW, Tony Atlas, Vic Steamboat. You know, we told this story a million times. About them winning the title a million times, and Bob Orton's there, and Tom Pritchard's there for some reason. That's kind of weird. But that's just kind of like your indie promotion, what they called indies at the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you went. And then you have some other ones on the side here. You got FCW, got the Florida Championship Wrestling Revival.
Yeah.
From back then.
Steve Kern's the champ.
Steve Kern, Buddy Landell, Bugsy McGraw, 1990, man. That jumps out to me.
Yeah.
Ron Slinker, Bounty Hunter 1, Brickhouse Brown, Jumbo Beretta, Terminator. Lou Perez, that's Al Perez's brother. That's a legit. Wow. Jim Backlund, a.k.a. Jimmy Del Rey, and Mike Awesome making an appearance.
Wow, Mike Awesome.
I want to get some tapes of that. I want to see how that goes. And then you got some Southern promotions here, and then World Wrestling Council. So, yeah, that's your ratings. And then they talk about in the analysis about how basically Stampede went away, so now we moved ICW up, and we've moved some other things up. And, you know, they kind of talk about how some of these matches, you know, how some of these rankings work. They do. That's one thing about these analysis things. They'll be like, well, so-and-so wrestled Hulk Flair a bunch. Or Hulk Flair. So-and-so, Kurt Hennig, just picture this. Kurt Hennig wrestled Hulk Hogan a bunch and lost. And so he, even though he's IC champ, or even though he's actually, he wasn't IC champ at the time, but even though he's ranked, he goes down a bit. because he lost to Hulk, even though he still wrestled Hulk, so that still counts for something. So that's how they would justify that.
Ah, makes perfect sense.
Yes. And that's it for the book.
Yeah.
That's it for Sports Review Wrestling from May 1990.
It's an Apter mag.
That is a fact.
I got this in a lot on eBay with a bunch of other magazines, but I picked this lot because that picture stood out to me. The guy took like 2 weeks to ship it to me, and I got mad, and I opened a case, and he sent me a free magazine that he wasn't originally going to send me with it, so he made up for it that way. And I'm very happy, and we'll be talking about those magazines some other time.
Right on.
But yeah, so that's it for Sports Review Wrestling.
And you can find myself on Twitter, AngryHeroSean, as well as Instagram.
Sweatpants Joe for me on Twitter and Instagram as well. Like us on Facebook. We are there on Facebook to like. And please subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Rate us 5 stars. Tell all your friends. Tell all your enemies about us, because we need the ratings, because Apple Podcasts really helps grow the podcast. So if you're into it, cool. Give us a shout out. Or give us a rating, I guess.
Please do. And thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk again soon.